super strong, supernatural, and super bad. His punch can topple a skyscraper. His kick can split the earth in two. More destructive than an earthquake, mightier than a tidal wave. A one-man disaster area.
42nd Street Pete.
Shot full of lead and he still ain't dead. Jump back, Jack, for your skull is cracked.
42nd Street Pete.
Ladies and gentlemen, the man who said to Lady Gaga, I'm going to poke your face, 42nd Street Pete.
Yeah, we'll be in a festive mood tonight for a change, I guess. I'm tired of being downbeat about everything, even though everything still sucks. But, you know, like I said, I've done my thing as far as I'm concerned. You know, at least somebody's going to have a good Christmas because of me.
There you
go. My good Christmas. So fuck all the naysayers is what I say. And I heard you had some kind of problem this week when you said something. I saw something on sort of my Facebook about your server blew up Tuesday night or something because you were talking about the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah. We had Jim Mars on Night Watch, and he was talking about what happened with JFK and the conspiracy. And I said, and it was going along just fine. And I said, all right, bottom line, Jim, tell us exactly from start to finish, what the heck is going on and what really happened. And as soon as he started to talk about it, everything went down from here to Germany. All of our servers, all of our relays, even the satellite relay, everything went down. The whole network went down. And I was like, what in the world is going on here? So come to find out, some kind of a pulse went in, destroyed our network where we used to be, our server farm in Germany. So now, for the last 3 days, I've been going crazy trying to get us back online here at jackaloperadio.com and finding that server farm and getting us a new one set up. And it's been a chore, but here we are. We're live, we're rocking, and they can't keep a good station down.
Yeah, but did you announce you were going to do this about the Kennedy thing?
Yeah, you know, we put it out there.
That's where you fucked up.
And all
never let anybody know what you're doing.
All of our affiliates need that stuff, and they were promoting it. So,
well, see, that's where they fucked up too, because you know, see, now I can say what you want me to say what I say, or
do
you,
sure, sure.
What's the conspiracy theory that you go by?
Well, I don't really have a conspiracy theory. I was kind of open to hear what, you know, what the words were, and the facts were pretty shocking. Anyone that wants to hear that show, go over to nightwatchradio.com and click in the archives and grab it. It's the show you weren't supposed to hear, but you know, I don't want to take any thunder away from Jim. I want people to hear what he has to say, and I don't want to put words in his mouth. But needless to say, he says it's an inside job, and people that were pretty close to the president.
Oh yeah, okay. Now this is what I have personally found out about this thing through reading and stuff. And this originated in Hustler, another yardstick for fine journalism. But you know something? You can't take everything at face value, because they'll make somebody look stupid, you know, because they're telling the truth, as we both know. And they'll do their damnedest to cover shit up and stuff.
Right.
Well, something came out that back with Hustler that this was a mob hit, an inside job. Now, they were going on the premise that, you know, okay, Joe Kennedy was a rum runner, and so was Aristotle Onassis. And all this was interconnected with people like Sam Giancana, Mickey Cohen, Frank Sinatra, people like that. Now, Frank Sinatra was one of the guys who really, really pushed to get Kennedy in there. And I just read the Dean Martin book, Dino, by Nick Toshes. I'm probably saying the name wrong, but it's called Dino. Just Google Dean Martin, you know, books. And it has little things in there, too. But now, going back to the Hustler thing, they were going on the premise it was a mob hit, and it was also something because it was a double cross within the Kennedys against the people that put them in, and that the whole deal was, with even with Jackie Kennedy, was all of a sudden she's married to Aristotle Onassis. And it's like the guy, you know, you hit your rival, you take his gun, you take his woman. So they were going on that premise, and that, you know, that Oswald was a fall guy. Ruby was dying of cancer anyway, so he really had, you know, nothing to lose, and was probably taken care of under the table and shit. So, and that was the other thing they were saying, that, you know, when LBJ was told that, you know, this was going to happen and you're the president now, and he didn't want to, and they basically, they said something about he was in a plane, and they basically said, we'll toss you out of this fucking plane.
Yeah.
So now you go back, and there's been all this shit bouncing around, you know, over the years about the Kennedys and Marilyn Monroe and this and that and the other thing. Well, now you segue up to you know, the book I just read, and the last issue of Playboy had an article where basically it looks like some older, you know, mob guys were on their last legs and were, you know, saying things. And the crux, what I put together in the book was that, you know, Frank Sinatra, who, you know, we all know was probably connected, and, you know, Sam Giancana was involved with a couple of women that they were involved with, and so was Mickey Cohen. Remember Liz Renee? She was Mickey Cohen's girlfriend, remember?
Yeah, yeah.
And she wouldn't roll over on him, and she went to jail?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a stand-up woman. But, you know, Marilyn was involved in that whole thing, and basically, you know, the Kennedys were banging her, Sinatra was, everybody was banging her. I think the only guy who wasn't banging her was Robert Mitchum, for some reason. I read that somewhere.
Maybe he was afraid at that point.
No, no, he really saw it for what it was, because he was no angel. You know, he was doing this, but he basically, in the book about him, it said, you know, they don't think he ever did, because he was pretty protective of her, and he just, you know, saw her that she was ready to go to pieces at any given moment. So
right,
but, you know, getting back to this whole thing, you know, Sinatra has all these guys, you know, Peter Lawford, Joey Bishop, you know, Sammy Davis, going through this whole thing. They get Kennedy in now. Now, here's the crux of the thing. Bobby Kennedy's going after Jimmy Hoffa. And all of a sudden, he's at the attorney general, and he's trying to indict all these mob guys that basically helped to put his brother in. So this incensed them. And then, you know, in Dean Martin's book, it says Dean was the only one who was smart enough to realize there wasn't going to be any guineas in Camelot. So, you know, after Sinatra, you know, really figured out what this is all about, they booted Peter Lawford out. And if you remember, Lawford pretty much drank and drugged himself to death, because he knew a lot. It was probably a lot that he knew that he never could fucking say, and it basically ate it away and killed him.
Right.
So, you know, that whole thing. So they're basically saying, you know, it was a double cross, because everybody pulled to get him in. His fucking brother turned on him. And he did nothing to stop him. He was asked, you know, please tell this kid to back off. Oh, no, no. So, yeah, it's interesting. I think it was last month's Playboy, which may still be out there somewhere.
Man.
Yeah, but, yeah, see, I don't know if you knew any of that shit, or that was what that, you know, that gentleman you were talking about.
No, man, we didn't go into all that, but that's pretty crazy. That is pretty crazy stuff.
Makes more sense to me.
It definitely makes, you know, some kind of sense. Hard telling what maybe the truth lies somewhere in between all of this. It's kind of out there.
Well, you know, it just stands to reason, because, you know, the Kennedys were Irish, and, you know, an Irish and Italian don't mix, even though they marry and beat the fuck out of each other, it seems. But, you know, it's the true thing, because I remember, you know, it was always, you know, Sinatra, you know, benefits and shit like that. And, of course, he dragged Dean and the other ones on, because, you know, this was going to be their big push, and then, you know, Bobby turned, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, then the whole Marilyn Monroe thing, that was a hit. And Jeannie Carmen told me that.
Man.
Now, there was one tough broad, Jeannie Carmen.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I met her at a chiller. You know, it was years ago. Unfortunately, she just passed away a year or so ago. And she still looked good. And she gave me some clippings and stuff. And she basically was spilling the beans that, you know, she was one of Marilyn's roommates, and they were all party girls, you know. And, you know, she openly admitted, you know, what was going on with this thing. And she says, yeah, that she was knocked off, and she wasn't afraid to talk.
Man.
It was like her, Marilyn, Shelley Winters, I don't know who the hell else. I think one of the cable channels did a special on her, the Hollywood True Story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because she was a monster of Pedro's Blancas.
Man.
Yeah. She was actually the golf pro, too, because she left home, and she was picked up by this guy, and this guy trained her, but she surpassed him with trick shots and shit, where she could actually knock a golf ball out of a guy's mouth without breaking his teeth. And, like, you'd be fool enough to let anybody fucking attempt that to you.
There you go.
Yeah. But, yeah, and then it was some, I don't know, she... You know, all I can think of, she was one tough broad. That's all I can think of. And I met her. She actually walked up to me when I was first doing the gimmick and asked to have her picture taken with me. And I regret that I never kept in touch to get the picture. But
That would have been cool.
Shit happens. But anyway, I did say I was going to do something tonight. I already advertised it, so I have to do it, because I never lie. I do stretch the truth a bit sometimes, but I never lie. I don't know if you know, they're going to remake The Mechanic.
Really?
With Jason Statham in the title role.
Weird.
And they're also, looks like Stallone is going to remake Death Wish.
Wow, that's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it is weird. And this only goes to prove what I've been saying, that American filmmaking reached its pinnacle between, I would say, 1963 to maybe 1982. That was the pinnacle. And why I say that is all they're doing is remaking films from that period, and that wasn't that long ago. You don't see them remaking shit from the 30s or the 40s or the 50s, do you? Nobody's remaking The Wild One, you know?
Well, not yet. Now that you said exactly. It, though.
Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah, I know. Well, here's the thing. There was a man who came out back in the day, and his name was Sam Peckinpah.
The man.
The man. And he had started in TV, you know, way before this as a writer and a director. And his TV credits, you know, I'm way fucking older than you. So, you know, everybody, I am an anachronism now. I have something to be pitied. But he started in the Westerner. That was his. This is one of the ones that put him on the map, was the Westerner. Not that it really went anywhere, because it only lasted, like, I think, one season.
Right.
But that was the one that sort of put him on the map, because it was gritty and realistic. But, he previously done Klondike, Pony Express, The Rifleman, Zane, Grey Theater, Broken Arrow, Gunsmoke, Have Gun Will Travel, stuff like that. And, you know, then it was, he got a shot to direct. I'm trying to think when the hell this happened. It was early. The first one, it was, I think it was in the early 60s, Deadly Companions.
Gotcha.
With Brian Keith, who had been in the Westerner. And it got noticed because it wasn't your, run-of-the-mill Westerner. It was dramatic. And then the next one he did was in 62, and he had the reunited Joel McRae and Randolph Scott. And I believe this was their last film. And that's when he started with his little stock company of character actors, like very young Warren Oates, L.Q. Jones, Chill Wills, you know, people of that, you know, that ilk. And, you know, then the big break, you know, quote unquote, was Major Dundee. Now, film historians would call Major Dundee a complete clusterfuck, because it ran so far over budget and there were so many excesses. It had just gotten, so out of hand that Charlton Heston, in order to save the film, said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll throw in my salary to finish the film. And he didn't think they would take it, and they did. But, you know, and I believe now they just put out a restored version of it, because they cut it up because of time, because it ran very long, and it had a very weird soundtrack that, if you had the videotape or the first DVD release of it, it might be on this, but they always had this thing like, beep, bleep, bleep, and they were using it for TV commercials going back in the mid-60s, some kind of security commercials. But, you know, this is the type of cast he had. Charlton Heston in the lead, who was Major Dundee. Then Richard Harris, Jim Hutton, James Coburn, Michael Anderson Jr., Senna Berger, Mary Ardoff, Brock Peters, Warren Oates, Ben Johnson, R.G. Armstrong, L.Q. Jones, Slim Pickens, Michael Pate. I'm trying to think who the hell was in this thing, because it was loaded with people. Oh, shit. Slim Pickens. He was in it. John Davis Chandler, Dub Taylor. Oh, shit. A few other people I can't remember. But this was, this was his forte as far as casting, because he'd get all these great character actors in it. And that became his stock company. And then, he didn't work for a while after that. you know, obviously, because, you know, this the cost overruns and they basically they shit all over it, you know. And, you know, in truth, a lot, you know, it was very disjointed, very, you know, out of touch. But, you know, I always liked it because of what it was, you know, with the character actors and stuff and the storyline that, you know, it was basically a bunch of Union troops and a bunch of Confederate prisoners had to go try to rescue these kids that were taken by the Apaches who just massacred, you know, some ranchers. And they had to cross the line and go into Mexico. And even though they found the kids, they decided, you know, they wanted to take this guy out. So it's, you know, some really extended battle sequences too. But, you know, pretty bloody too for its time, because that was the prelude of things to come. Because then we go into 1969 now. I wasn't quite out of high school then. And, you know, I was in my waning years and I really hated to be in high school. I was cutting class. And they were giving a lot of hype to this film called The Wild Bunch. And I never paid that much mind to things. They kept saying how bloody it was. And I was getting right about now. I'm, you know, at 69. We've seen a few things that were getting a little fucked up, like you had Blood Feast, you had the Flesh Eaters, you had things like that. So I was interested with all, you know, all the outcry against this graphic violence in this thing. So I remember it was a Sunday, and it was running a matinee. It was at the Embassy Theater in Orange, which had this huge panoramic screen. And something I don't remember if I ever said about grindhouses. Most of the older grindhouses had a very burgundy velour interior. Everything was burgundy, dark burgundy, velvet, or purplish. To like, you know, when it was dark in this theater, it was dark in the theater. All you saw was the screen. So it was pretty cool. So I go in and I pay to see this thing. And after it was over, I went to the payphone because, you know, I was still young then. And I says, I'm not coming home till after I see this again. And I sat through it twice because I was mesmerized by this whole thing, just blown away by, you know, the whole, you know, slow motion violence and the whole storyline and these characters and stuff. And it just rocked me. And I didn't realize that that version had been edited. And, you know, like I said, the critics were shitting all over this thing, you know, with the squibs and, you know, but they, you know, they were showing what nobody else showed before, what a fucking bullet hit does to you.
Right. Yep.
And the guys they had in it, you know, again, here's the big, you know, the cast, you know, coming back from the other couple films. I mean, you know, they put William Holden in the lead, who actually, you know, him and Peckinpah had a lot in common because they were drinkers. Ernest Borgnine, one of the finest actors of all times. Robert Ryan, who was, I believe, almost on his way out at that point, and so was Edmund O'Brien. But, you know, here was Warren Oates, you know, still an up-and-comer. Ben Johnson, an established character actor. The Bounty Hunters, you know, they had, you know, all these guys, but, you know, the two that stood out were Strother Martin and L.Q. Jones. And what probably I didn't pick up on until I was looking at watching an interview with L.Q. Jones, and they said him and Strother, you know, they were sitting there discussing how to play this whole thing, and one of them says, why don't we play it like we're gay? So I never picked up on it, but if you look at the whole thing, the way that they're going back and forth, it's like bickering lovers. And then that one point where they were arguing over the body, and I think Strother calls LQ a black-hearted liar, and all of a sudden LQ stops what he's doing. He goes, you shouldn't have called me that. And then he, like, all of a sudden back goes, I'm sorry. So, yeah, I never picked up on that, but it was so subliminal.
Right. Some of the best stuff is.
But, you know, that film just blew me away. And, you know, that was up and coming. Bo Hopkins was in it. Albert Dekker was the railroad guy who was really nasty and shit. And, you know, Emilio Fernandez. And I met guys that knew him, kids that from Mexico when I was working Liquidators, and they used to call him El Indio.
Weird.
And he actually killed somebody that was working for him during an argument. He really? Was like, I really think Because him and Peckinpah were tight, but from what I understand from people, he was like the Mexican mafia. He was nobody to fuck with. And he was in a bunch of Peckinpahs. He was in a bunch of Westerns in general.
Right.
He was playing like, you know, the bandit or the crazy general or something. So, yeah, this was the one that, like, fucking blew everybody away. And I remember there was a theater up around here. It was called the Park Theater, and they were running a bunch of revivals. And what they did one time was they booked Mean Streets and the Wild Bunch. And this was, I would say, maybe we're going late 70s. And, you know, I'm trying to think now. I went up there on a Saturday night, and they were running this, and we were in the balcony. The place was packed. And, you know, Main Streets is good. You know, it's Martin Scorsese, De Niro, you know, all those people. David Carradine getting shot in a bar by his brother. And you go wrong. So, okay, Mean Street ends, and the opening thing for the Wild Bunch starts, and, like, there's a tangible excitement building in the crowd. And when they get to the point where it flashes on the screen, William Holden goes, if they move, kill them, and then it flashes, directed by Sam Peckinpah, the fucking place popped like you were at a wrestling match. People cheering and screaming and shit. And, you know, like I said, this was years later. So,
wow.
You know, that was the impact that film had. But, you know, the backlash for Sam was, okay, you know, the graphic violence and things, you know, they were, like I said, the critics that didn't get the whole thing, that he wasn't showing violence for the sake of violence. He was showing how ugly violence is. You know, that whole slow motion dance of death and shit.
Right.
So, now his next film was Ballad of Cable Hogue, which was pretty much a love story. And, you know, people were expecting, you know, more Wild Bunch, which it wasn't. It was Jason Robards. I'm trying to remember how this one, he was a prospect. He was dumped by these desert rats, again, Strother Martin and L.Q. Jones.
Yep.
But where they dump him, he finds water. And, you know, starts a way station and stuff. And then I think this preacher, David Warner, comes out, and then Stella Stevens. And then there's, you know, this whole thing going on with that. So people shit all over it. You know, it was like, it just came and went. Nobody knew about it. But, you know, it stands on it. You know, I'm one of those guys, maybe back then and we're talking 1970, you know, I was 17, 18 years old. So I wasn't, you know, I probably didn't like it back then either. And like I say, I'm, you know, over the last few years, I'm giving a lot of shit a second shot, because what is out today, to me, is fucking garbage half the time.
Yeah.
I was thinking really good.
I agree.
So, you know, that really didn't work box office-wise, but then he went over and did Straw Dogs, which blew everybody away because of its whole, you know, turning this mild-mannered guy and, you know, pushing him almost to a primeval state of violence, you know, with Dustin Hoffman. And, you know, that was another one that, you know, really had everybody standing up and taking notice. But, you know, again, you know, it was very violent. Then his next film was, you know, about a rodeo rider and his family, Junior Bonner. And, you know, again, that, you know, another one came and went because, you know, it wasn't, you know, the trademark, you know, blood and guts that people had, you know, come to associate with Sam's name, unfortunately, because Sam was a lot more than that. He was a visionary. And, you know, when he did something, a depiction of the Old West, it was the Old West as it was, as he saw it, you know, on the, you know, the Texas, you know, Mexican border. You know, what was that line in the Wild Bunch? What's in Mexico? And so the Martin goes, Mexicans. You know, so the Junior Bonner. Now, his next film, The Getaway, was with Steve McQueen. And that, you know, brought it back into, you know, the shoot 'em up territory. And again, you know, he had a great, great, great cast. But, you know, he's had great casts in all these things. Because, you know, you go back, this is why I don't understand why a film like this would, you know, tank back then. Because you had Steve McQueen in the lead, Robert Preston, Ida Lupino, Ben Johnson, Joe Don Baker, Barbara Lee. How can you go wrong with Barbara Lee? Bill McKinney, Doug Taylor, even Sandra Dee was in it. You know, you had a ton of great people. So, you know, I really, you know, I think people were really pretty shallow back then, you know, as far as they wanted certain shit, you know, they would type somebody into the whole thing, and they were a lot more than that most of the time. But, you know, the problem was, you know, like, especially with Sam, once he strayed from certain things, you know, it was like Romero. Okay, like just as you know, a comparison. Remember Knight Riders?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I fucking love Knight Riders. I thought it was great.
Oh, I did too.
Yeah. But again, you know, people, oh, there's no zombies in it. Well, you know, you don't really need fucking zombies.
I agree.
You know, people can be getting back to The Getaway. You know, I think the fly in the ointment with Peckinpah was with The Getaway was Allie McGraw. I remember reading something. You really didn't want her. It was something where the studios put it in, put her in, rather. But again, he had Ben Johnson, who's always been with him, Sally Struthers, Al Letterly, Slim Pickens, Richard Bright, Doug Taylor, Bo Hopkins. You know, all these guys that, you know, always, you know, Roy Jensen, he's another guy, always a bad guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's great cast, you know, throw the violence out the window because it really doesn't fucking matter because the guy was a great director.
True.
And then, you know, the other one, you know, the other one he did right after that, and this was almost, and again, you know, to go back, Sam was a big-time boozer, and Sam would piss people off. Because there was a story on Major Dundee where he got Charlton Heston incensed to the point where Charlton charged him with his saber out.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah, there was a bunch of shit going on like that. Like James Coburn was a calming influence on him sometimes. But yeah, there was always these stories about, you know, Sam would push people to the limit. Another example with that was Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, because remember this, did you ever see that film? Because you said you're not into Westerns that much.
I didn't see it.
Okay. Well, there's a scene where Kris Kristofferson is playing Billy the Kid, and he's handcuffed in this chair, and R.G. Armstrong, who is a big man, tall, is a deputy, and he's going off about, you know, he's a religious fanatic and shit, and he's really going off strong on Chris, and then they end the scene, and Peckinpah goes, "You suck. I don't believe a thing you just fucking said. That was horrible. I don't believe anything." And RG says, "He incensed me to the point that," and you watch the scene, he actually fucking nails him a shot. He goes, "He just pissed me off to the point where I fucking lost it." And he said, "But that's what he wanted." So he would push people to a certain point.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Oh. But, you know, like I said, he was getting heavier and heavier into the booze, so, you know, we're back in the 70s when Coke was king and people didn't know how bad Coke was.
True.
That was the whole thing. So, for whatever reason, you know, I can only suspect or whatever, because he was, you know, all these, you know, you gotta remember, all these guys are like, you know, you're back in that era where fucking anything went.
Right.
Really. And the big thing I remember with this film is they cast Bob Dylan in it, and Peckinpah didn't want Bob Dylan in it. Remember reading that in his biography.
Right. That's crazy, though.
Did not want him. So, matter of fact, in his cut of Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, that Knocking on Heaven's Door song ain't in there. Not in there at all.
Hmm, weird.
They threw that in for Slim Pickens' death scene, but, you know, here's another great cast. I mean, and they said Sam just loved his character actors, and they had, like, James Coburn's Pat Garrett, Kris Kristofferson as Billy the Kid, then Richard Jekyll, Katie Girardo, Chill Wills, Barry Sullivan, Jason Robards, Bob Dylan, R.G. Armstrong, Luke Askew, John Beck, Richard Bright, Matt Clark, Rita Coolidge, who was probably, you know, was Chris's girlfriend, Jack Elam, Emilio Fernandez again, Paul Fix, L.Q. Jones, Slim Pickens, Charlie Martin Smith, Harry Dean Stanton, John Davis Chandler, God, is that enough? Elijah Cook Jr., Rudy Wolzer, Gene Evans, Donnie Fitz, Dub Taylor, Don Levy. I mean, look.
That's an all-star cast.
And then I'm just looking at IMDb because I can't remember all this shit, obviously, sometimes. Bruce Dern, uncredited as a deputy.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, you know, what a cast. But they were saying that during this whole thing that he was like really, really getting more and more fucked up on stuff. And to the point where he was sleepwalking through shit. And the other thing was, nobody can seem to classify Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia.
I know.
Was it a horror film? Was it a shoot 'em up? Was it a Western?
I don't think it was a horror movie.
No. Well, you know what it was? It was Warren Oates playing Sam Peckinpah. That's what it was. And the only one who didn't know this at the time was Sam. Because he gave Warren, you know, nobody else had given Warren the lead in a major, it was something that was going to get a major release, you know? I mean, yeah. I think he'd been in Cockfighter or Born to Kill, that AIP thing years ago that nobody even fucking sees. So, you know, it was that. But, you know, here's another one, like, you know, where this one just blew people away. But, you know, here's the other one with the gay undercurrent, because Robert Weber and Gig Young were playing gay hoods. There's a scene at the bar where this chick walks up and puts her hand on one of the guy's thighs, and he just turns around and decks her. So then when they're having a shootout, one of them gets killed, and he's walking over, and he's like almost crying. So, you know, just that weird little undercurrent that he throws in there now and then. And again, you know, he loaded up with his people, because Emilio Fernandez is back there again, Chris Christopherson, Donnie Fritz.
Oh, yeah.
Don Levy. So... But that was, it was, you know, that was another little thing he did.
Yep.
But then everybody was saying, like, after that, I mean, he was fucked up on that to begin with, you know, as far as he didn't really get it. Then, you know, they went into The Killer Elite, which, you know, I thought was okay. With James Coburn and Robert Duvall and, you know, Burt Young coming in and, again, Bo Hopkins.
Right.
You know. I believe, you know, something I could, I'm going to have to cheat, because I got a funny feeling Sonny Chiba was in this. Well, Gig Young was in it, I forgot him.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't see Sonny Chiba. I'm trying to think. I fucking could have swore I remember something. I could be wrong. Victor Senyon, but not him. Nah. I did read something about, I didn't know this either, you know, going on, I just said Sonny Chiba, so what the fuck, you know, I didn't need to talk about him. He was Lee Van Cleef's double in that TV series, The Master.
Really?
He was Lee Van Cleef's stunt double.
Weird.
Well, then Sam went overseas and made Cross of Iron with James Coburn and Maximilian Schnell, which... I you know, and again, you know, I didn't say in the beginning of this, I saw all these in the theater. I mean, every one of them. I had that privilege, you know, to see them all on the big screen. So, the last, you know, Cross of Iron was one, and they, you know, they said it was, you know, another one he got fucked over on or something, really couldn't get creative license, but I liked it. You know, I thought it was a good film. And I think, you know, the one that really... There's rumors floating around with this whole convoy thing. And again, he loaded it up, you know, Ernest Borgnine, Chris Christopherson, and Ally McGraw again, for some reason.
Huh.
And I'm trying to think who the fuck else, but you know, this was at the height of the CB craze too, you know?
Right, right.
So, I remember I had a CB in my truck. We're going to have a convoy. I look back and I'm like, we were assholes. Really were. That fad lasted for a while.
That's
everybody and your brother awesome. Had. You know?
You just called yourself an asshole for no reason.
Who, me?
Yeah, I love it.
I was an asshole. I didn't, you know, driving around. Breaker, breaker, 19. You make up cute asshole, stupid fucking names for yourself, you know? and then you wind up getting in arguments with people and meeting them in parking lots and punching each other out. That's where the 70s were.
Lovely.
Yeah, so... You know, Convoy was something about that. They had a song. Remember the song, Convoy?
Yep, I do.
Have a convoy. I fucking crack up. So don't forget, we were out all hours of the night doing this crazy shit, so.
I know, it's awesome. You know, my thing was, for us, when I was in high school, we were kind of like this little vigilante group that would go around and protect what we felt like were the innocent. We were kind of trying to run out some drug dealers, because we had this thing where they were bringing all these kids from the dark recesses of downtown to the suburbs and putting them in the schools.
Oh, yeah, we had that too.
And they were selling like drugs and crap there, and there was violence and all kinds of stuff. So we said, you know, let's try to do something about this. So we kind of had a gang of our own, but it was more like just a group of us that were kind of vigilantes. We ran on Channel 13 on the CB radio. And I remember those days very fondly, calling out on the radio and all of us keeping in touch. And it got to where the local police would listen to Channel 13 to see where the action was going to go down, because we'd be there first. Thought that was pretty funny.
Mm.
Crazy days.
Yeah. But yeah, going back to our buddy Sam, I believe, you know, he did something called Jinx, but I don't think he was credited for it. And then the last thing he did was the Osterman Weekend. And he had been in rough shape for the last couple of years of his life. He died. He was like 59 years old.
Jeez, man.
Yeah, just a fucking wreck. But, you know, here was a man who changed cinema. And getting back to, you know, something I had said, they actually did remake The Getaway with Alec Baldwin and Kim Basinger, which I heard. I don't remember watching that. That was when I had my video store. Wasn't really a good fucking seller either.
It's a great movie, though.
Yeah. But, you know, them, I mean, you know, the updated version.
Doggone it.
Did you like that one?
Well, yeah, I don't know. Good question.
I don't know. I'd have to give it a second look, but I really cannot fucking remember anything about it. It's probably one of those ones you can buy for like $2.99 somewhere in Big Lots.
Probably.
Yeah.
It's good stuff, though, I think. I think it's a great.
Yeah, well. Well, that is our grindhouse salute to an American legend, Sam Peckinpah. And it's just very unfortunate that he left us at the early age as he did, because I'm sure he would have had a lot more to come out with, you know, as a filmmaker.
Oh, I agree. But
again, you know, it's a sad commentary that drugs take their toll. And, you know, but, you know, Sam was that type of guy. He was, you know, a hard-drinking, fighting man, and he would push his people, but... I mean, he left us a legacy, and like I say, it's been imitated and duplicated, you know, right out now, to this day. So
it's true. And, you know, I kind of wanted to see him do a science fiction man or something crazy like that. That would have been just outrageous.
Yeah. No, you know, his true genre was the West, because he really understood and knew that part of the West, you know, Texas, you know, Mexico end of it. He embraced that. I believe he was married to a Mexican woman for a while.
That's awesome.
They had his daughter on one of these. They got a couple bios floating around on like some like the Western Channel runs one now and then, that, you know, she never knew her father. And I don't know if his son, you know, I thought his son was trying to direct or something. It's interesting.
It is.
Everybody wants to direct. I want to direct. I don't know.
It could be scary.
A lot of shit, but, you know.
Yeah, I do.
Then we're leading up to, oh, and something else I also threw up advertised I was going to announce. Something going on with WSU, and we've been, you know, fortunate enough to have a lot of those ladies on. This was not supposed to happen. I don't know what precipitated this, only Angel Orsini had made her own belt, the Guts No Guts All Glory Champ, or All Guts No Glory Championship. And she was basically, as we know, if you're a regular listener to the show, attacking people at matches and things like that. Well, at the first pay-per-view, she attacked the representative from Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazine and screamed, "You have to sanction my belt." So basically, Booker and Ray Sager came out and said, "All right, we'll sanction the belt. We'll sanction the belt. Lay off." Which he didn't, but that's beside the point. So I was supposed to go to a show last Saturday night, but due to a situation around here, I couldn't leave, so I missed it. I don't know what happened, but it looks like it's going to be one last chance, or, you know, the final countdown or the final conflict, whatever, that on January 22nd, Mercedes is going to put the belt up again in a ladder match against Angel, winner take both belts. So again, I don't know what precipitated this, why it did. I remember we had said that sooner or later Mercedes is going to want that belt, because she has that, you know, you know, the WSU belt. She has a WXW women's belt, and she also has the Indy Girls Championship title. So it was only a matter of time, you know, once the belt was made legit sanctioned, that she would want it. And I guess that's what happened. Wow. So that way Angel gets her title shot again. So I was contacted by the owner, promoter, and booker, one of the bookers of WSU, who's been on here, Sean McCafferty. And he wants me to try to get the girls on. He wants me to try to also get someone we haven't had on before, Alicia, on. And where it's going to be, you know, the time frame isn't that good where we really can, you know, do anything lengthy. But I want to see if I can get Angel and Mercedes on at the same time to just explain what happened, what led up to this, you know, and, you know, where it's going to go. So, but obviously there's going to be a winner and somebody's going to walk out undisputed again. Whether, you know, and from my experience of being there, you know, with all these matches with those two, except the only one I missed because I was snowed back out, was like the cage match. I don't know who's going to take it, to be honest with you. I really don't.
Yeah,
they're both that fucking good, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be something else.
So, but, you know, hopefully we can get them both on or individually and they can explain the situation.
That'll be awesome. I'm looking forward to that for sure. I mean, it's always a good time when they come on anyway.
Yeah, plus we'll try to get Amy back on. I also, well, again, we don't know whether it's going to happen or not. I just sent the promoter an email saying that we could possibly do a live show that night from there.
Oh, yeah.
If they have a way to do this, if they have, you know, the facilities to do it, we could possibly do, you know, a blow-by-blow live show with, you know, me, you know, hopefully me or, you know, sit Amy down or sit one of the other girls down, you know, or right after their matches, let them come in and get on the air, you know?
That'd be sweet. So, sweet. Yeah, so,
definitely. So, we got shit we're working on. Plus, I don't know if anybody heard the Dirty Laundry show last week. Did you hear it?
Of course I did.
What'd you think?
I think it's everything that you guys do is great.
Well, it was only the first thing we did. I mean, you know, it was a reaction. Do we have anybody listening to it? You know?
Of course, we had listeners, yeah. I haven't gotten any email reactions yet.
Well, how many? You know, struck my fragile fucking ego.
Man, I don't want to, like, be mean to anybody out there, man. It was over 800 people.
That's not, well, you know, midnight's a tough slot unless you're a complete insomniac, but, you know.
Weekends are good. She's been doing good. It's growing every week, and she's doing real well, and I just, you know me, I don't like to brag about stuff like that. We had a lot of numbers. I was very impressed, very happy.
Cool. That's all you should have. Well, she's going to be, of course, on this Savage Saturday Suckfest, you know.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
3 hours we're doing this?
Yeah, we're going to get as many people as we can on there and have a good time. I'm going to have the office here. The studio's going to be full. We're going to have all kinds of stuff going
on. You know something? In all honesty, if you have too many people on at once, it sounds like a clusterfuck.
Well, that's true. But we're going to try to work it out in a way that's kind of fun. It's
kind of neat and orderly thing. I mean, am I on for the whole thing?
Yeah, you are. Unless okay, you get tired, then you can jump off during a break. But
I'm not going to get fucking tired if we're rolling because... well, you know, Joanne might be over here for all I know.
Uh-oh.
You know, I might call in for the Christmas special. You know? I mean, what the fuck?
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's not beyond the realm of possibility.
Exactly.
It's going to be real interesting. I don't know. You having people who are promoting new shows on?
Yeah, yeah. Some of them. I got to announce the schedule. It's going to be pretty cool. It's kind of a blowout. We're kind of letting everyone know what the hell's coming for the next year.
Oh, cool.
I'm pretty excited about it.
So you think we're going to get sponsors now?
God, I hope so. We need it, man. Well, I'm sure we're going to get some sponsors, at least on a local level, because we're going full FM around here. So it's going to be pretty big.
You're going full FM. In other words, you can turn on an FM station and hear me curse?
Well, that's the one thing that's going to be funny is on Saturday nights, the uncut stuff, we're going to have ads for it where you can go listen to it online because we can't play it over the air. But we're going to have plenty of ads. Matter of fact, you and I are going to have to cut an ad for that. That's basically you telling people, hey, if you're enjoying yourself and you'd like to hear this uncut, you know, get your butt over to the station and then you can hear the whole thing.
Hey, take your hand out of your pants and get over to WW. Jackalope105fm.com.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. It's going to be good, I think. It's going to be really good. I'm looking forward.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, New Year's Day. I mean, what the fuck? I'll probably be so. I'm not doing nothing New Year's. Anybody want to invite me out New Year's Eve? Anybody local? You know, just for shits and giggles.
There you go.
Get me drunk. Don't let me drive. Watch me piss all over myself and ruin your house.
You know? It could be fun. It could be fun.
Yeah. It could have be. Some drunken slut puppy give it up to me and me just laugh at it because I won't care.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, well, who the hell knows? Like I said, Joanne and I hit it off so well that, you know, I don't know what her overnight fly out special is, but it might be worth it. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, all the money I make being me, you know, what the hell? You have to just blow it all in one night. Won't pay the rent. Yeah, and my new motto for 2/11. Yeah, spend it at 7/11. That's where you dine, you swan.
Yep, yep.
Oh, and my shout out to all you Al-Qaeda, Taliban, douchebag motherfuckers that are threatening to do something for the holidays, do some terrorist acts, blow some shit up, do all this other stuff. You know something? Like I said, you want to find out what the real America is all about, start pulling that fucking shit over here and you're going to find out fucking fast we're going to find your ass and it ain't going to be fucking pretty. You think your little fucking cave-dwelling cocksuckers over there can hide? Yeah, they can because they're rats, but over here, forget about it. You don't know what you're fucking with. And I'm not talking about the government. I'm not talking about the army. I'm talking about the people in general you're going to piss off because they're going to take matters into their own hands. It ain't going to be the judicial system. It's going to be fucking biblical. An eye for an eye. Tooth for a tooth. Head for a head, fuckheads. So, you're unserved.
Man, don't hold back, Pete. Tell us how you feel about this.
Oh, I'm tired of hearing it. Fuck this shit. Bunch of federally... They're looking for a federal grant to build a fucking mosque on 9/11. Give me a break.
Jeez.
Yeah. Something else came up, too. Something about some Islamic woman being whipped by Sudanese policemen in... and Sudan, where the fuck else? While another one walked over and laughed, and they took turns whipping her and shit.
Jeez.
And these are the people that, you know, that this is like, we're embracing these people. Why? They're fucking vermin, all right? The whole Sharia, whatever, fuck, you know something? Suck my dick and call me Charlie, right? This is all bullshit. We are fucking, we don't need this shit over here, all right? The whole freedom of religion thing, these people better wise up to the fact that this is just their leverage and how to get in using our laws and our regulations against us, how they can plead this freedom. You know, if I wanted to, like I said, if I wanted to build a fucking Church of Satan three-story cultural center down there, you think they're going to let me? Fuck no. So what's the difference? Explain that to me, you know? This guy's a slumlord piece of shit anyway, so what the fuck's the difference? These people are scum. They're fucking garbage.
Yeah.
Your religion's a lot of fucking violence and intolerance. Deal with it. You think I'm going to bow down and kiss your ass? You got another fucking thing coming. Oh, and I got some email from Sid Haig forwarded. If you get some kind of thing in your inbox that says something from Hallmark cards, a greeting from a friend, even if you recognize the email, delete it immediately. It's a fucking virus bomb or something.
Wow.
Yeah, something that can just eat your hard drive right up and spit it out in your face. Yeah.
That sucks.
Well, nobody sends me cards anyways. What's the difference?
No one sends you flowers.
Unloved and unwashed. Care anymore. No, I'm going to have a whole new attitude in 2/11 anyway.
Yeah?
The completely don't fuck with me attitude because I don't give a fuck no more.
Hmm.
You're either with me or against me. That's what it's all about.
Funny.
Yeah.
You're just taking people out.
My church. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's my church now. Fuck it.
That's right.
My church. We need converts now. Need a place to hold services.
That's right.
We're not going to have bingo. We're going to have blackjack and roulette. We need to find a convert who's a Native American who owns property so we can open the 42nd Street Pete Memorial Casino and Cat House.
That sounds awesome.
That's what we got to do. Old time shit. Like an old time saloon that the girls work upstairs. They'll be clean and inspected. That's it, you know? We cater to an upscale clientele. In other words, you got money in your hand. Come on in.
Well, nowadays, that kind of is an upscale clientele, yeah.
Go back to the old open 24 hours deal. You know, we're an Indian reservation. I'll claim I'm a member of the Figawi tribe. You know the Figawis, don't you?
Yep.
You've heard the story about how they got the name of the tribe, right?
Nope.
You didn't?
Nope.
Group of Indians walking around the woods and they don't know where the hell they're going. The chief turns to the sub-chief and goes, where the fuck are we?
Uh-huh. That's awesome.
I know. It's
horrible. Leave it to you to pop that one out.
Yeah, we should be in, we did that whole... Are we still doing that other show anymore, or is that dead?
We're doing it, but not this week. The holidays got me crazy, man.
Oh, so we're not doing the Dark Guy's Displeasure Chest?
No.
Fans are disappointed.
We'll do it, but not this week. I'll play an older one.
Well, when's just so all your fans out there, I've petitioned for Joanne the Key to Magic from Dirty Laundry to take over that spot, because if anybody can actually give pertinent sexual advice, it would be her.
Well, man, as soon as she's ready, we should talk, and then I can get her on it, because I do need her to start doing it. If she's going to start doing it, she needs to start doing it soon, because I want her to take over that Saturday right after New Year's. So,
yeah, because, she could actually, it would be interesting if she could actually just tape the show while she's doing a client, you know?
That would be awesome.
Yeah. There you go. Not have them know it, you know?
Yep.
Just had the Skype thing set up.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
You got yourself about a minute, my friend.
Oh, well, I guess. Are we going to tape another show next week for Christmas, or?
You know what? I don't know what we're going to do. It's a good question.
Well, we don't know whether they're going to tape another show, because you're hearing this live or dead Saturday night. So, anyway,
so we'll figure it out.
If we don't figure it out, have a great holiday, and we'll see you after the holiday. And if not, we'll see you next week. And, hey, we went back to actually talking about movies for a change. So, hey, back to the grindhouse. Stay sick and stay out of the restrooms. Bye now.